Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Fires have been burning in Australia for months, destroying thousands of homes, killing more than 25 people with no sign of slowing down. You can help by donating to support firefighters and charities, aiding people and animals. We have links to these organizations and more at dailytechnewsshow.com/Australia. Coming up on Daily Tech News Show, CES 2020 is in the books. And we recap some of the highlights and get the last word on products we think are worth your attention. This is the Daily Tech News Show starting now. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, January 10th, 2020 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Also in Los Angeles, I'm Lamar Wilson.
And drawing the top tech stories from Cleveland, I'm Len Peralta.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
We were just having a discussion about TV shows, from The Witcher to Flirty Dancing. we were also discussing the lyrics to Axel F. from Beverly Hills Cop. So much good stuff in Good Day Internet. You got to become a member at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Facebook is offering test access to some users of its desktop redesign that it first announced last April. The new look is supposed to be less cluttered, using brighter icons, and has an optional dark mode. Test users will see a pop-up inviting them to what the company is calling the new Facebook, with an option to switch back to the old look if they choose. Facebook is also asking for feedback on the new design.
Masimo Corporation, which develops signal processing technology for healthcare monitors, and its spinoff, CircuitCore Laboratories, are suing Apple for improper use of trade secrets. The lawsuit claims Apple got secret information from Masimo in 2013 and used it to infringe 10 patents, including methods to measure oxygen levels in blood and heart rate using light emitters and detectors.
Ooh. Uber will stop operations in Colombia at the end of this month. Late last year, a court ordered Uber to cease operations for violating competition rules. Uber says it's going to continue to fight for the rights of its drivers and riders, and it sent a letter to the government of Colombia this week saying it may sue under the free trade agreement that Colombia has with the United States.
The U.S. International Trade Commission is investigating allegations of patent violations by Philips against Fitbit and Garmin. The case covers four Philips patents on functions including motion tracking and alarm reporting.
India's highest court ruled Friday that a 150-day internet blackout in Indian-administered Kashmir violated Indian telecommunications law. India's government claimed the blackout was a security measure to prevent protest after a change to Kashmir's special status. However, Justice N.V. Ramana ruled that, quote, freedom of internet access is a fundamental right. The court has given the government of India a week to revise its policies and become more transparent about internet shutdown orders in the future. All right, let's start by talking a little bit about Microsoft and some hot water.
A former contractor working in Beijing had spoken to The Guardian about a grading program to transcribe and vet audio from Skype translations and Cortana requests, both Microsoft companies. The British contractor said that he reviewed thousands of potentially sensitive recordings on his personal laptop for 2 years while he was working in Beijing. The contractor also said that both usernames and passwords for other contractors were emailed to new hires in plain text and then shared between multiple contractors to make logins easier. Microsoft says it has ended that program and moved human grading into secure facilities, none of which are in China. Microsoft also says that the snippets are a very small percentage of de-identified content and not more than 10 seconds long.
Yes, a lot of this is an echo of the stories we had in 2019 about this sort of thing. You know, people's information, very small amount, but sometimes people's information being reviewed by contractors, and were companies being transparent enough. The Guardian story is very much about this contractor saying how bad the security control of that information was by the company he was contracting to. So the question becomes, how responsible was Microsoft for this? Should they have been looking into this contractor more? They've done the right thing since it came to light, obviously. But you know, I don't know that there's much that we can learn from this or move on. It seems like the companies all know that this is not acceptable now.
Yeah, again, Microsoft not overseeing the day-to-day operations of a third-party company. Well, you know, sometimes things slip through the cracks. But not knowing things like usernames and passwords and how they're shared, and the fact that a bunch of passwords were being used by multiple people just to make it kind of easier to log in, and the fact that this was coming from within China, and even if they're 10-second snippets, you know, some of this is accidental audio that's picked up. You know, a lot of this can be sensitive information. You know, who had access to this information based on the way that the internet works there, and who might still have it?
Yeah. I'm not as concerned about the China part as I am that they're still not monitored by Microsoft themselves. I think that's the problem that these companies need to deal with, is that there's just some sensitive information you don't send out to third parties. I mean, you know, they can make their own office in China if that's possible. I'm just, you know,
and they have,
exploring here.
Microsoft has operations in China, so yeah.
I just see no reason why to push that out. It's, you know, that would make me feel better. Yeah, you know, keeping that in-house. That way, if the shoe drops, we know who to blame for it.
I mean, I think it's fine to give it to a third party if that third party is demonstrably trustworthy. And that's been the problem, is that they contracted it out simply to save some money, it seems like, without checking to make sure that these companies were following proper security practices. And that's not okay.
Absolutely. So let's talk about Nielsen and music. So Nielsen reports that music streaming services grew 30% in the U.S. last year. That's pretty incredible. Reaching 1 trillion streams for the first time. 82% of music consumption in the United States now comes from streaming music services, including Spotify, Apple Music, and YouTube. Physical album sales fell 19% to 9% of the market in 2019. Nielsen says Post Malone was a top act of 2019, and Drake, Billie Eilish, Taylor Swift, and Ariana Grande were numbers 2 through 5. Genre-wise, hip-hop took a 28% share, rock came in at 20%, and pop was in third place with 14%.
Oh no, we might need to rename popular music if it's not that popular anymore.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. Now I mean, it's just, hip-hop, you know, is the new pop, yeah.
Yeah, you probably never heard of this pop song. Very indie. I think, streaming services growing does not surprise me. Growing 30% last year is a big bump.
That's a big jump.
You know, that's a lot of adoption happening in the U.S. at least in 2019. I think a lot of that has to do with, especially mobile carriers sometimes bundle this into their deals. I know my my most recent Verizon plan ended up giving me Apple Music if I chose a certain tier, so I didn't have to pay for it separately. I was like, great, awesome, I'll save $10 a month type thing, and I just, you know, just more folks having the bandwidth to be able to enjoy this stuff. And man, physical album sales falling down to 9%. You know, we've heard so much talk about, well, you know, the hipsters and DJs are keeping vinyl alive. Not that people still aren't buying that, but it does seem like it is. We're getting to the end of life here.
Yeah, and the majority of that physical decline is CDs. CDs are now just an inconvenient way to get digital music, right? The last time I got a CD was from a Kickstarter I had backed, and I knew I was going to get the CD. It wasn't like it was a surprise, but once I got it, I was like, wait, what do I do with this? Because I also had the MP3s from that Kickstarter, right? So I'm like, I don't have a convenient way to rip this. I don't need to rip it because I got the MP3s. Like, I'm not sure what I'm doing with a CD. And I think 82% of music consumption being streaming, I think that's where everyone, you could literally round that up to everyone, and the 18% can complain, but most everyone is just streaming their music now.
Isn't
here.
That a weird thing, Tom, that I mean, you and I, and probably most of us here are like, What do we do with this thing? Like just for what a CD is, you know, if I get something from Nintendo, like the best, you know, their music compilations, I'm like, that's great, but I have nowhere to, where do I play this?
I have an LP player in my front room. If I get a vinyl copy of something, I know exactly what to do with it. Right. That's so funny. Yeah.
But,
congratulations to Drake, Billie Eilish, Taylor Swift, and Ariana Grande.
Yes, they're not doing
and Post Malone, obviously.
And of course, Post Malone, who we had a story on streaming numbers from Spotify, last month, I think. Post Malone was their number one artist, so looks like he's a crowd favorite.
Yeah, and hopefully
they're making money.
Yeah. I've been streaming more music. Like, I just use Apple Music through the Amazon Echo and just have it play today's hits. Quite often. So,
you know, I think a lot of this too is the 5 years ago, there were people who were like, yeah, but streaming, you don't really own the music. What if the album gets yanked for some reason from the service that you use? And you know, you really aren't in control of that. That does sometimes happen, but less and less frequently.
Yeah, it's
streaming,
so rare.
Streaming music has gotten pretty solid to the point where it is a rare day where I go, where's this album on Apple Music that I wanted and doesn't exist anymore?
Now we need to do TV and we're good.
Yeah, seriously. And 10 Speed and Brown Shoe Pilot is available for streaming. Well, no, we're there. Researchers at Malwarebytes say that an Android phone subsidized by the U.S. government for low-income users comes pre-installed with software that installs adware without the user's knowledge or permission. Software is located in the Settings app, meaning you could uninstall it, but then you'd be uninstalling the Settings app, which means you wouldn't be able to use your phone. So not really a way to uninstall it. A second piece of software called Wireless Update installs your phone's security and system updates, but also other apps without permission. It appears to be a variant of AdOps from a Chinese company that was found to collect user data on blue phones. So that's worrying. And again, if you could remove it, but if you do, you won't get any system and security updates anymore. The $35 phone is called the UMX U686CL. You get it through Virgin Mobile's Assurance Wireless Program. It's part of the Lifeline Assistance Program, which is a U.S. FCC plan to make free or government-subsidized phone service available to millions of low-income families. Sprint is investigating this because Sprint owns Virgin Mobile, but said it did not believe the apps were malicious. And Malwarebytes didn't find any actual malware being installed by these two apps, although Malwarebytes considers the two apps themselves to be malware. They haven't been installing anything malicious. But I don't think that's the point. It's not whether this is malicious. It's that just because I'm getting a subsidized phone, Lamar, you pointed this out in our prep meeting, doesn't mean I should give up these rights.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's baffling. I know people who have these type of phones who are low income, and if the government is already subsidizing it, what's the point of the ads? You know, and that's just greed at that point.
I mean, the point of ads is more money on top of that subsidized phone. Yeah, but you're right. This phone is already subsidized.
The government is paying for it.
Have to have the ads on top of it.
Right. That's my only thing.
Yeah, the whole thing of like, well, you could technically uninstall this, you know, these apps that you might not want, you know, adware and just kind of bloatware, even if it's not malicious, like you mentioned, Tom, for the phone to then become useless at
that point.
That's
just insulting. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. And the subsidized model should have absolutely nothing to do with this. This is actually a great program on the surface.
Yeah. Fantastic program.
I mean, let's be clear. We're not saying this phone isn't free. You have to pay $35 for it. And Sprint is getting money from the government to make up the difference. So putting the ads on top of it, if that wasn't clear, it's not like we're saying, oh, nothing is free. No. This phone should have already been paid for. And then they're putting ads on top of it, which don't give you any control, which no one would accept that from a website under California law or European law.
Absolutely.
That's ridiculous. Yep. So, this is not okay.
According to a Pew Research Center survey conducted June 3rd through 17th of 2019, one in five U.S. adults now say they regularly wear a smartwatch or a fitness tracker. Among households that earn more than $75,000 per year, 31% wear one on a regular basis, compared with 12% of households with annual income below $30,000. Gender-wise, 25% of women say that they regularly use wearables compared to 18% of men. So women are wearing more of them. Hispanic and Black adults more likely than Caucasian adults to wear a fitness tracker. 26%, 23%, excuse me, and 20% respectively. What to do with that data, more a matter of dispute. For example, the story has really gotten to my heart. Whether it's acceptable to share health data from wearables with heart disease researchers, 41% said yes, 35% said unacceptable, 22% weren't sure.
Yeah, so this is an interesting breakdown, and there's all kinds of speculation you could have about why it breaks down this way. Is it that women wear wearables more often because they're more concerned with health, or is it more concerned with weight loss? Is it just a random situation? I don't know.
Yeah, that stat was interesting to me because, you know, I would never say, well, women care more about fitness than men, because that's not true. It depends on the person, of course. And these statistics are, you know, they apply to everybody, you know, for different reasons. I think maybe it might have to do with the fact that, you know, it's kind of in a way, like a piece of jewelry.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe women are a little bit more watch wearing than men in general. You know, I don't know if that's true, but that would be maybe my guess.
Certainly more bracelet wearing, probably.
Yeah, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
And men generally wear, again, we're verging on lots of stereotypes, so, you know, forgive us, but, you know, men in general will wear, if they wear watches, a lot of times it's wearing them for status symbols, right? And a Fitbit isn't as much of a status symbol as a, you know, as a Rolex.
Excuse you, Tom Merritt. This is getting me in
trouble. Unless you're Sarah Lane, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm glad to be in the black men that small percentage that has the Apple Watch.
The sensible middle percentage there, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Now, did we mention in the pre-show, was it the Hispanic and black was – I think you mentioned, Sarah, because they were younger? It was like a younger demographic?
Yeah, Roger mentioned that. Hispanic and black population do tend to be a little younger, and this study did find that amongst younger users, there was higher adoption. So that might affect those numbers.
Yeah. It's really interesting breakdown.
It's also interesting to me just in a meta sense that we have enough people wearing these devices now to do a meta study like this. You know, 31% of people making $75,000 or more wear them. Even 12% of people with annual income below $30,000 wearing one. That tells me that, you know, it's not mass. It's not like everybody you meet's going to have a wearable, but it's certainly more than it used to be, where it was perceived as like, well, you must be just a real enthusiast about something to wear
right.
this. It's becoming a little more mainstream.
Yeah. Well, and again, going back 5 years and a little bit more, the whole kind of wearable fitness tracker, the market was still testing the waters. And there were a lot of people who were just like, I'm not going to wear that. I don't care how many steps I take in a day. But the smartwatch has blossomed into so much more than that, you know, an extension of your smartphone, giving you all sorts of data. And fitness trackers, even, you know, I'm wearing the Fitbit Versa 2, it is very fitness oriented, but it gives me a lot of other information that has made it more, it is a source of information for me, not just an exercise tool, although it is that as well.
Yeah, I went from not really wanting to wear the Apple Watch when it first came out. I wore it for like a month, and then we ended up giving it away at Nerdtacular to trying it again a couple of years later, and now I'm hooked. I love mostly the fitness stuff, but as a side benefit, the notifications, you know, the mm-hmm. weather. I don't use it as much to control things. Like, I'll have my podcast player controls on there, but that seems a little finicky sometimes. But yeah, I am. I suppose I'm one of those unusual white men that wear a wearable.
Yeah, right. I use mine for this really interesting. This is like the latest one is Series 5, mm-hmm. I believe. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah. So I found this great use for this. It's called Time, where you can find out how much, you know, what time it is during the day. And I find that very fascinating for this device.
You know, I should try that. Yeah. Is that an app?
It's actually built in, and most people don't see it.
I don't like bloatware on my watch.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Maybe you can uninstall it then.
Yes, can I uninstall it? Yeah.
But I mean, we joke, but at the same time, for many years, I didn't wear a watch because I was like, I always have my iPhone with me. Like, okay. How hard is it? And even when I started to wear my Fitbit, it took a solid month for me to stop reaching for my phone wherever my phone was, in my pocket or a purse or at mm-hmm. the table next to me. And finally, I've now finally gotten to the point where I'm like, the time is a part of me. It's 1:48 p.m. Pacific. And that's like, it's going backwards a little bit, but it has been really nice yeah. to retrain myself to wear a watch.
It sounds silly, but you're right, Labar. It is one of the major benefits of wearing a watch. You know, watch wearers already knew this, but now we're part of it.
Yep. We're part of one of you.
Hey folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Engadget handed out its official Best of CES Awards. They are the CTA partner on this. The Best of CES went to Hydraloop. Remember me mentioning on the show earlier this week that mm-hmm. we didn't talk about water recycling enough? Here's our chance. Hydraloop is a home water purification device that you install, and it will take your wastewater, filter it six ways, and then reroute it for use in your toilets, your washing machine. If you have a pool, it can water your lawn with it. It's available in Europe already and coming to the United States this year for $4,000. Among the other winners were the Phonak Verto Black hearing aid with Bluetooth, just a very good implementation of that. The Withings Scan Watch, we talked about this on the show, that has the heart rate sensor, the ECG, and 30-day battery life and a very good-looking
nice.
Analog kind of appearance. Mm-hmm. The Wallbox Quasar, which manages an electric vehicle's battery to help power your home. So you keep your car charged, but then you can actually supplement the power in your home from your car's battery. It kind of manages that for you. We talked about the Weber Connect Smart Grilling Hub, usable with any grill. That won one of the category awards. And the Razer Kishi side controllers for your phone also won the Engadget People's Choice Award. The Verge gave its own Best in Show award to the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Fold and called out the Alienware Concept UFO, Intel's NUC 9 Extreme platform, Samsung's bezel-less 8K screen, the GEC smart switches and dimmers, the hubless ones. We talked about all those on the show, and they gave an award to the Netgear Nighthawk Mesh. We talked about all of these on the shows. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the trends we saw here. But Lamar, I know you've been following this really closely, too. What has caught your eye out of the CES to kind of help us wrap this up?
I mean, it's got so much stuff. So I lean towards gaming because that's kind of what I do the most. But the Big O from Origin, mm-hmm. They had a PC that is a gaming streaming PC, but you can also choose to have an installed PS4 Pro or Xbox Digital Edition installed in the case, which I think is like really cool. Now that's crazy expensive, but for someone,
so it's the hardware from the PS4.
It's
the
actual hardware. Not the console. Wow. not the box. Yeah, they take the board out and everything. I guess they got permission to do that, and it looks beautiful. It's a great concept, and again, is one of those, you know, the new ones are coming out at the end of the year. You know how long term, but I think if you're an enthusiast, I thought that was like really cool to see on there.
That takes me back to the old Ultimate Gaming Machine, or Ugum, that we built on the screensavers way back in the day, which was like a Frankenstein.
The Ugum.
Stuff to the game. Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't even born then. Wow. When was it?
Yeah, it was before
you. It was before
time.
You were born.
Exactly. So also, Samsung showed off the Odyssey G9, which is like its 49-inch ultra-wide gaming monitor, which I need it. It's not a want. I need it.
Yeah.
Because
I need this for my setup here, too.
Yeah. I have two 27-inch dual monitors, and now I want this to replace it.
I keep saying I'm going to get a new monitor, and I keep sticking with my old HP 27-inch. Like, I really need to do it. But every time
we talked about that.
I see the sticker price on these things, and I just get, I don't know.
Yeah, and then the you talked about the concept UFO from Alienware.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit on Tuesday with Sherlyn Long. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a handheld. It looks like a Switch.
Did you like it? Do you like this concept?
I really do like the concept. I mean, yeah, the Switch is kind of like, I'll say the pioneer, but like, what is the popular thing now? But something for Windows that can play Windows games. I mean, I'm always looking for a portable Xbox. I think that'd be the dream. Mm-hmm. And so something like that is at least heading to that direction. The Switch is crazy popular, right? So people, and mobile games are popular. People do want, this stuff on the go.
I feel like this caught a lot of people's imagination, because if you like the Switch and you're like, oh, but I could play all these games that I can't play on the Switch in a similar fashion with a little bigger screen. Like, yeah, I think that started to get some wheels turning.
Exactly. And finally, just a little fun thing that happened at the beginning of the week. The PlayStation 5 logo reveal was funny. I was watching the conference and I felt bad for my fellow comrades who do videos or blogs, whatever, who was sitting there with the record button, just waiting for that moment for the reveal that everybody thought. There was no reveal, and I felt bad for people.
There was a reveal. It was like, it's the old logo, but with a 5.
Yes. So that was a sad afternoon.
I like CNET's take on it that you sent us the link to, where they just like it was kind of a weird flex by Sony to just be like, here's our new logo. Guess what? It's the same as the old logo. Drop the mic. Leave the stage. Yeah.
There you go.
Mark Serrell's over at CNET has a column about that. We'll have the link in the show notes as well.
Let me ask you, what do you like? I didn't see everything on CNET. I was busy here, but like, was it a better show than the year before?
I've been to so many CES shows. Right. They sometimes blend together. And it's very easy, especially for people who report on it all the time. We kind of go like, we got to trudge back to Vegas and there's going to be all this vaporware that never sees the light of day and concept cars that aren't real. And, everyone kind of jokes about that part of it. And that was true this year. But I also saw a lot of just really practical technology. And that's not, I'm a sucker for the big 8K TV that I don't need and I'm not going to buy anytime soon, but I still like that. I like the flashy stuff. But really, a lot of the home automation, smart IoT devices, things to help you sleep better, stuff where it's like they didn't really have to sell me that hard on the idea, as long as the product works as advertised. Yeah. I thought that I was kind of impressed. I felt like CES came down to earth a little bit more this year for me.
I heard more people saying, wow, I found more things that I thought were interesting than usual, which the general, jaded tech press is like, it's another CES full of vaporware, right? So there really was a feeling of there's some interesting stuff. There's also the weird stuff, but there's some interesting stuff. We saw smaller TVs being touted, the 48-inch TVs with the OLED panel from LG Display, along with which the big ones.
Cool.
That was an interesting trend to be putting a smaller TV as an advantage, right? We saw a lot of foldable screens in concept devices rather than last year when the foldable screen was the concept. They're like, look, we can fold a screen. This year they were like, now that we can fold a screen, here's what we might do with it. Hubless smart home tech, that, like you said, Sarah, the rising tide of health-oriented tech, wide use and misuse of AI and things, though I think with true machine learning now showing up in products, we saw a lot of products that can make promised automation features, things that they say they could do but didn't really do well, start to work well. So I think broadly, that's where I came out of CES. I agree. It was a better show for practicality than usual.
A lot of good CES stories in our subreddit as well. Thanks to everybody who submits stories and votes on others so they rise to the top. DailyTechNewsShow.reddit.com. You can also join in the conversation in our Discord, and you can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS. All right, let's check in with Chris Christensen. It's 2020, and the Amateur Traveler has a little news bit about Airbnb's recent milestone.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. You're familiar, I would assume, with Airbnb, which has been disrupting the hotel world as well as the online booking world. One story I missed, but I saw on Skift.com that in 2019, Airbnb actually passed up Expedia in the number of room nights booked. And so that's a fairly significant disruption in that industry. Expedia had been for some time the largest booking engine on the planet. And what that does to the future of the accommodation industry is unclear, especially as Airbnb is planning to expand their offerings to be more of a full service offering than they are today. They've already added to accommodations, tours, and we'll see what else they add. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Interesting moment. Thank you, Chris. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
Yeah, Doug had some thoughts on vehicle pedestrian alerts. We talked about this on the show yesterday. Doug says, your coverage when you talked about vehicle to pedestrian alerts and how they would work with vehicles, I work in the automotive electrical area and thought I'd give you some insights. Actually, it was on our Wednesday show. One of the reasons this technology is starting to come out, Doug says, is there seems to be an agreement to move to a 5G-based vehicle-to-vehicle and vehicle-to-pedestrian communication system. For years, there was a competing standard called DSRC that was a form of Wi-Fi, and it caused confusion about what would be deployed. One of the arguments for going to a 5G system was that an added benefit would be easier adoption with pedestrians and cyclists, as their phones would automatically be carrying the proper radios. As far as interaction goes, while phones will undoubtedly alert users to a threat of a major part of the system, will be added temporary spatial awareness by the vehicle of who is around it, and if necessary, early triggering of autonomous emergency braking on the vehicle in order to slow or stop it.
Yeah, that's a big one. Being able to automatically slow down a vehicle or stop it to avoid hitting a pedestrian is a way bigger part of this equation than the pedestrian necessarily knowing to get out of the way. Doug, thank you for sharing your expertise. I love this email.
We need that in LA ASAP.
Oh, yeah. So many.
Oh, man. Really. I'm like, put that in my car. If I'm in danger of hitting anything at all, I mean, just stop my car. If for any reason, I'm not able to do so.
I agree.
Shout out to all our patrons at our master and grandmaster levels, including Tim Ashman, Philip Shane, and Jeffrey Zilks.
All right, let's check in with Len Peralta, who has been busily drawing the topics of the show today. Len, what have you got?
Well, you know, this image is called Lamar Wilson's Wild CES Ride. And I know that Lamar did not actually make it to CES. He actually stayed back. But this is what
that's
I feel.
That's why he's so happy.
Yeah. That's why he can run. His feet aren't hurting.
This is what it would look like in Lamar's head about all the things he was so excited about. Foldable tech, switch-like things, big honking screens, and of course, logo only tech of the PS5.
You nailed it. And I did have a press badge. I just didn't show up. So
it's right. All true.
Yeah, all of,
it's what is going on inside of Lamar's head. So you can. This is available right now at my online store, LenPeraltaStore.com, or if you're a Patreon member of mine at Patreon.com/Len, you can get this right now. It's up there right now. Download it. Print it out, make it your own. So
you even nailed the shirt and the sweatpants. You are amazing. So that is exactly what I.
Hey man, I do my research for the guests. So there you go. So.
Thank you, Len. Also, thanks to Lamar Wilson for being with us today. Lamar, what has been going on in your world?
Hey, start of the new year, got some cool things coming on a YouTube channel, YouTube.com/Lamar Wilson. In 1 hour exactly, I will be dropping a video about me buying the PS2 on eBay and getting scammed. So interesting video. So check that out on my channel in 1 hour from now.
Oh, man. I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm dying to find out what the story is. So I can't wait.
Yeah, it's an interesting story.
folks, don't forget, we have new Patreon reward merchandise to celebrate 6 years of DTNS. Len Peralta created a 6-year anniversary DTNS logo. You can get it on a mug, a T-shirt, a poster, a sticker. You just have to support us at a qualifying level on Patreon for 3 months. So if you're already supporting us at one of these levels, just hang around for 3 months and you'll get one of these. All the details are available at patreon.com/DTNS/merch.
If you have feedback for us, well, we have an email address, and that email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. If you can join us live, please do Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 21:30 UTC, and you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday.
Bye.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
I love.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.